you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Leila Rahimi on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
They can call it a three-peat. We know that has been trademarked by Pat Riley. You can call it a whatever you want. Three-chief, a chief-peat, whatever it is. They're about to head to New Orleans to explore the opportunity to reach a level that's never been seen before, Tony, in the history of the NFL.
You know who Tony is. Tony Romo, Jim Nantz, CBS, on the call as our Super Bowl is set. Superb Owl. It is not one word. It is two words. Super and Bowl. I've decided that if you send me a question or a comment and Super Bowl is one word, I'm not replying to you. I know one person who would laugh at that joke. He is on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline right now. Guests, join us on that hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Download the Circa Sports app today, CircaLasVegas.com. James Palmer, James of the 89 Podcast, Underdog Fantasy. You are a man of many talents, James, and I appreciate you joining me for my first solo show. He's also at Bleacher Report, at James Palmer TV on Twitter. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, friend. Listen, we had a mutual friend send me, are you going to be at the Super with an owl emoji? So yes, we're all on the same page. And I'll text you who that was. Or you can take a guess.
I guess that it might be Dave Zingaro.
There you go.
Dave Zingaro, the Eagles insider for NBC Sports Philly. I am not surprised. That's how far back we go to the emoji keyboard first just being a thing. You have extensive knowledge of the Chiefs. I feel like the Chiefs had a casual season, casually secured top spot in the AFC, home field advantage in the playoffs, casually went through the playoffs, got everything done that they needed to get done, played an epic game with the Bills. Occasionally they get some calls to go their way, and now they're in the Super Bowl. How do you summarize the season they've had where they didn't have to be absolutely dominating in every facet? They just needed exactly what they got at the time to make it work.
Yeah, Leila, I know people are tired of this, but this is from being around him so much and being around Brady so much. Patrick is learning how to win games like Tom Brady. And it doesn't matter about stats. If you go down the list, almost every statistical category, this is the worst season of his career. But it's the best season of his career in terms of wins during the regular season. And he doesn't really care how they get him. And Brady was like that. And that's always, to me, when I covered Tom in New England, what set him apart from Manning or Breeze or anyone. Like, there was just an ingrained part of it to where, like, what do we need to do to win? And it's not my stats. And they're wired in that similar way. And I think what's happened in this year, the way you described it, is kind of like the way Travis's season has essentially gone. I talked to a number of people in Kansas City that said he's kind of rope-a-doping his way through the season because he knows they're going to need him in the postseason. And at the age that he's at, and as hard as he practices, it's just still hard to do it, and he's buying his time. And they have the ability to do that. And I said in the beginning of the year, I talked to people there, and they said, watch out when we get to the postseason because we'll probably be the best we've been all year. And that's right, because Hollywood Brown returned. Xavier Worthy has, you know, grown with Patrick Mahomes. The defense under Spagnuolo, every year I've covered them, has gotten better as the year goes on. They figured out putting Joe Tooney at left tackle was the best play on the offensive line. So, like, what they predicted was right. They're so good at figuring out who they are as the season goes on. That's kind of been their superpower.
That's how I felt watching the game against the Bills. I do want to get your opinion of whether or not Josh Allen had the first down. I know it's been a few days, but still, I think it's worthy of discussion. But going back to what you said about Tom Brady, how many times watching the early AFC championship games, for example, like the 2018 season, you know, that game happens in 2019, it's Brady versus Mahomes.
I was there.
And you're saying to yourself that overtime win, Brady's going to find a way to win. And it's mm-hmm. just what happens. And I thought about that game watching the one we saw on Sunday. Same concept.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. It really is. And when it comes down to crunch time and it comes down to making the biggest plays in the biggest moments, that's what the Chiefs do, and that's what you have to do to beat them. Like, a perfect example is this. I was told the Houston Texans sat down their entire team in a team meeting and showed what the Chiefs do in the fourth quarter. The coaching staff showed them, like, here's a massive, you know, fourth down conversion. Here's a third and long. They find a way to do it. The other team has, you know, third and short. They find a way to, you know, Nick Bolton or somebody comes up and makes a stop. Like, the Texans were showing their entire team, like, this is how they win. They hang around with you for three quarters, and in the fourth quarter, they make plays, and other teams don't. And we saw that during the regular season with Josh Allen, right? In the regular season game, Josh Allen went out there and on fourth down made a play. And he went out there and he won the game. And that's what you have to do against Kansas City. But so few teams often do that. So when it's close, I hate to say it, other teams start to, like, have that creep into their head. I've talked to enough, you know, opponents that have been like, if it's the fourth quarter and it's close, it creeps into their head that, like, the Chiefs are going to do it again. And it creeps into the Chiefs' head, oh, we're definitely doing it again. And until you break that, that cycle is going to continue.
Yes, I feel like it's like Tiger on Sunday now. If you're in the fourth quarter with these guys, something's going to creep into your head to cause a result that you don't want.
And it's different every time, right? It could be special teams. It could be, you know, they get a big return when they need one that happened to open the game against Houston, right? And they gift themselves 3 points right out of the gate. Houston made a red zone stop, but they're in field goal range to start the game after the kickoff. So, like, they always just find a different way in all three phases, and they're coached very well in all three phases, to go out there and just find the little nuances that give them the edge.
We're talking to James Palmer of the 89 Podcast, Underdog Fantasy, and also Bleacher Report here on The Score. Thanks for joining me. All right, now I want to know. Josh Allen, I think he made that first down.
I think he did, too. I do. I do think it was enough on the replays to overturn the initial call. I think the call, if it went the other way and then they looked at it, it would have been confirmed as a first down. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's essentially where it was at. But I do appreciate, I will say this, because I was there for the Texans locker room and I was there for the Bills locker room. And I think we've seen, you know, James Cook and company come out and say, well, when you need a yard, get a yard. Like, we shouldn't have had it be close. And so I do think there's an element to that, to the way the Bills are wired, and I appreciate that. But I don't think that really, to me, that's a toss-up. Like, honestly, I'm kind of curious what your take is, because some people are so firm. Like, there's no way that wasn't a first down. I'm like, I don't know. Because it's his back to you on a lot of the angles, so where's the ball? Like, maybe if we just had technology to just take this thing a little bit further. We do. We just haven't used it.
Yeah, that's the part I don't get. You're always going to look at the shoulders and the head first. And you know mm-hmm. that's how Josh Allen goes into the defense. You know, so many times his back is turned. That's just how he moves. I thought it was a first down. What bothers me is they have a chip in the ball that they refuse to use. And then they're like, oh, well, our ball is misshapen. Okay, then put one chip at one side and one chip at the other. This really is not as hard as you're making it out to be. You could also make your referees bowl time, since they can award touchdowns. There's all these aspects of this that you could make your game more accurate if you wanted to. You just don't want to.
I thought they had the first down on third down. Honestly, on the play before, I'm surprised that wasn't ruled a first down. If you look at the completion, I think, was it to Knox or Kincaid? I forget which one.
Right.
I thought that was the first down. And then the ball actually got spotted further back than I thought. It's an interesting – it will be connected to the Chiefs through all of this. Yes, it will.
Unfortunately, it will also be connected to the Bills, who I think Josh Allen had a good point. You know, you're wondering, what does he mean when he's saying that our defense – you know, is too small, or where is this coming from? Like, who's counting them out? But think about the voice he must have, and think about what they're telling themselves after they've lost to the same team in the playoffs now four times in a row.
Yeah. I mean, I was there for that, what I think is maybe the best game I've ever covered. I've covered all these Super Bowls that lately have been outstanding. But that game between Allen and Mahomes in divisional rounds, where they went back and forth in the final couple of minutes, was incredible. And if I'm Josh Allen and I'm thinking back to that game, even after losing this one and going, I threw a touchdown pass with 13 seconds to go. and I lost. Like, I don't know how he gets over it, and I don't know how the organization doesn't start feeling like, man, are we cursed in some capacity? We had him at home last year. I was at that game at Orchard Park. Like, they had the Chiefs on their own turf last year, and they couldn't come through. So it's coming in a variety of ways, and their Bills are going to essentially be built very similarly to the way they were this past year. There's not a whole lot of change there that's going to happen with the way that they're built as a roster. So now you run it back and you do it again. But I just little things pique my interest, Layla, honestly, where like I'm standing at the 20 and they start that final drive. And I'm like, Josh Allen has gotten the ball with enough time for a drive. Let's see what happens. And I look up and James Cook's standing on the sideline to start the drive. The first handoff to, you know, the first play's a handoff. And I'm like, what are we doing?
Wait a second.
So he runs on the field on the second down. And I'm like, what? Just certain things just always make me scratch my head. He had 13 carries for 86 yards. He averaged 6.5 a carry. Like, I would go more than 13 carries. I'll tell you this. Saquon has a career high of 21.6 carries a game this year. I don't think he's getting 13 carries a week from Sunday.
Right. And that's it, is that teams decide that they've got to play Kansas City's game because it is, let's face it, the benchmark, right? It is the golden goose of the NFL. And we've seen the entire playoffs that if you abandon the run, you will not advance. Mm-hmm. Think about the Rams. They abandon the run. They decide with hubris to throw confidently in the snow in Philadelphia. That's what loses them the game. Yeah, I just don't understand why teams want to abandon their run game knowing that's what brought them there.
Well, there is a thing with the Chiefs, and I'll tie the Eagles into this as well, so we talk a lot about Kansas City, but like the Chiefs and the Eagles have more 10-play drives than anybody else in football. So there is a play of if we run the ball and we go 3 and out, there's a fear of when do we get the ball back. And I do know that that plays into offensive coordinators' minds and play callers' minds, that they often outthink themselves in a manner in which that happens. And I think Philadelphia is disciplined enough in their run game to stick with it. I think the difference is Philadelphia also gets explosive plays out of the run game. I mean, more explosive plays than anybody.
Right.
And so, you know, I think in this game, neither team turns the ball over, and both teams stay on the field really, really well, better than anybody else. So I think it's going to come down to, do you have the ability to keep running the ball? Isaiah Pacheco has not been the same coming back from the injury. Who are you taking in the backfield, Kareem Hunt or Saquon Barkley? So stick with the run, Philadelphia. Stay on the field. Make sure you don't go 3 and out. Don't turn the ball over. And I think you have a really, really good shot. What happens is everybody just changes the way they play when they play Kansas City.
Yeah,
and I don't think Philly's going to do that, though.
It's like everybody gets on the court and starts to yell Kobe and shoot threes. I feel like that's what happens. Like you just lose all sense of the plot goes out the window. You've lost the plot. We're talking to James Palmer, the senior NFL reporter for Underdog Fantasy, insider for Bleacher Report and the 89 podcast on Twitter at James Palmer TV. Our morning show asked a question that I think you would be great at answering.
Wow. Build up.
Yeah, this is good. So defensive coordinator standoff. Showdown. Would you rather have Vic Fangio or Steve Spagnuolo?
This is going to be ready. This is my answer. If the game's a regular season game, I'll take Vic Fangio. If it's a playoff game, I got to take Spags. I mean, I'll say this. You're talking about arguably the best big game defensive coordinator in the league's history lately. Like we're on the verge of 5 Super Bowls. As a defensive coordinator for Spags, he's beaten Tom Brady in the postseason. He's gone down and gone through these potentially now 4 Super Bowls here with Kansas City. I just know that he always makes the right call in the biggest moments. The fact that he's not getting any head coaching looks is interesting. There's enough people around the league that scratch their head about it because he wants another crack. I know things went terribly wrong with the Rams, but that was an eternity ago.
Right.
He just has such a good feel 4 games. He brings a lot of pressure. I think they have to bring pressure, by the way, on Philly. Like they have the second biggest discrepancy in terms of getting pressure with 4 or bringing extra guys, them in Indianapolis. So like against Philly's O-line, they're going to have to bring pressure. It's going to come down to when does Spags bring that pressure. I love the way Vic. I love Vic. I love the way he coaches. I love that this team is bought into the way he coaches because it's not for everybody. But this group has really bought into what Vic has done. And his style is very difficult. I will say this. I've talked to Patrick a bunch about it over the years. He hates going against Vic. Yes, he's never lost to Vic, but he hates going against Vic. Most of the time, Vic didn't have a quarterback when he faced Patrick. But he really feels, and he's told me this, like he gives me something different every time, every single time. And they were in the same division. So if that shows you how much Vic can, you know, dig in and get a variety of looks for him, he's got that in his bag.
I feel like he is the secret sauce for the Eagles, even though you know exactly how good he can be. I described Vic as death by inches, which is a phrase that has been used for him. And then, you know, it's situational pressure with Spagnuolo.
Yep, that's the way it is. I mean, and like, here's the thing. I think this game really might come down to, in all honesty, there's going to be a blitz or two where there's going to be unblocked pressure coming. Right, I don't think anybody had more unblocked pressures this year than Kansas City. It's like 58 guys have come completely untouched throughout the course of the year. How does Jalen Hurts handle that? He hits A.J. Brown on a deep shot off of it when they bring, say, Justin Reed at safety or Trent McDuffie at the corner spot. They're both great blitzers. And does Jalen avoid it and hurt him? Or does he take the sack or make a poor decision? I think those couple of instances might decide this game, honestly. And Spags is going to pick the spots that he's going to do it. And you're right, Vic is death by inches. I mean, and he has a defensive tackle that is becoming just an absolute superstar right now in Jalen Carter. I mean, you talk to people in Philadelphia, they'll tell you when we watch the tape during the week, if he doesn't get to the quarterback, it's most likely because there was a hold. Like, that's the only two ways you can stop Jalen Carter right now. And so Vic has the pressure up front to only bring three and keep all the guys back and just continue to keep everything in front of him. You know, all these guys are in coverage, in Bond and all of them, because he can get pressure with three or four. And I think that's how the two defenses are built so differently. It's really going to be fun to watch.
The Eagles' offensive line is not at 100%. We know that. I think that's a big piece of it to me as well, is if there's anybody who can try to block it, or at least they have the knowledge, or even if they're not 100%, the Eagles will figure out a way to at least try to do what they can with the best personnel, you know, that they have.
Mm-hmm. And I think you also combine that with, like, Jeff Stoutland's one of the best offensive line coaches in football. He's one of the best ones that we've seen in recent memory. And I think what Spags puts you in, he puts you in a situation where it's, I'm going to put Chris Jones, because he moves up and down the line. What usually happens within the course of a game, I don't know if people know this, he'll go over to the sideline and talk to Joe Cullen, the defensive line coach. He'll talk to Spags and say, I want this matchup. I want to go over here. He kind of picks his spots at times, and they'll move him around. And then they'll put him on the end, and then they're going to bait you. And they're going to say, you're going to have to double Chris Jones, right? Because you have to. He's Chris Jones. But then when you double him and you shift towards him, Spags will bring pressure from the other side. And now you're short a man. So what I'm curious about is, if he's going to go out there on the edge, does Jeff Stoutland go, no, Jordan Mailata, you got him one-on-one, and I know you can, and we don't have to shift out there. Or Lane Johnson, you have him one-on-one, and we don't have to shift over. If they can do that, that changes the way Kansas City plays up front big time.
And that to me is probably the difference in the game, right? It's going to be really a fantastic combination of strategy and personnel. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I'm excited about is, you know exactly how these two teams got here. You know that come January and February, hardly anybody's going to be at 100% or healthy. But to have this level of talent and this level of real tacticians, it's so enjoyable when you consider what we've seen out of the last two weekends of football leading up to it.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, like, the only question mark I really have in these trenches really is, like, Joe Tooney has saved the Chiefs' season by sliding out to left tackle. I honestly think, and I was having a conversation with somebody about this, he might be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's won multiple Super Bowls with New England. He's now been on this run here with, you know, Kansas City, and he plays at an all-pro guard level. And then, oh, yeah, if you need me to play tackle because it's been an abomination for us, I'll go out there and play tackle against Will Hunter and Danielle Hunter and, you know, Will Anderson and play great. Do they keep him on the outside when Philly's real strength, like I mentioned, is on the interior? And you've weakened yourself on the interior. Like, if I'm the Eagles, I'm making sure I slide Jalen Carter away from Trey Smith, the other guard, and put him on the other side of Creed Humphrey and attack. Keep Joe Tooney outside. Like, he's a great guard interior. It's going to be really fun to watch how these matchups happen in the trenches.
James, I really appreciate getting to talk to you. Thank you for joining me for my first solo radio show. If I had talked to you about things we thought we would be doing when we first started at Comcast Sportsnet Houston, the network formerly known as, in 2012, I don't think you and I would be saying we would be doing this right now.
Yeah, let's talk about football on Chicago Sports Talk Radio. Let's do it.
Quickly, I know we're up against a break, but wishful thinking. What do you think happens with Trey Smith? Do you think that the Chiefs keep him, or do you think he goes to free agency?
He's going to be the highest paid guard in the history of the league.
Wow. Okay, so maybe they can afford him in Chicago. Maybe.
Yeah, he's going to be. And obviously Ryan knows him well. He's unbelievably talented, and he will be the highest paid guard in the league's history.
Awesome. Okay, so he's a bargain. Cool.
Yeah.
You know what? Honestly, you get what you pay for, in my opinion, and that might be the case. James, thank you so much. James's work can be found in a lot of places. I want you to check it out because he's one of my favorite people, and I have bias. The Underdog Fantasy Senior Reporter, NFL Insider for Bleacher Report, and we've gotten a lot of people saying they check out your 89 podcast, too, so I'm glad to hear that as well.
Steve is the absolute best. I get to talk to Steve Smith every day. Are you kidding me? It's a delight.
It's wild. It's on YouTube. James, thank you so much.
Yep, no problem.
That was James Palmer joining us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. We have a lot more coming up here on The Score. Layla Rahimi, my first solo show. It is with you. We're going to react to what we just heard out of James, 312-644-6767. There's a couple of other news and notes regarding the Bears and people adjacent to the Bears that's worth being brought up. And I have something that I want to tell you about. Aaron Andrews broke a sideline reporter rule on Sunday, but I'm going to tell you why it was a good thing. That's coming up next.
We're back with more Layla Rahimi on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
If I didn't know any better, Tyler Buterbaugh, I would say that that's the closest production value music gets to Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar, the halftime act for the Super Bowl this year. Am I interested? 100 million billion percent I am. But then again, I also like the Rihanna halftime show. And that was really more of an art display. It was performance art. I'm getting off topic. We're broadcasting live from the Scores Hyundai Studios. They are brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. A couple of notes to pass along throughout this NFL day. If you're asking yourself why the Bears were interviewing David Shaw, well, they weren't the only team. Tom Pelissero says David Shaw and the Lions have agreed to terms on a multi-year deal to hire him as the passing game coordinator. That is per sources. Shaw, 52 years old, you know him famously as the former Stanford head coach. He did interview with the Bears, and he has worked with the new OC, John Morton, before. Big-time hire for Dan Campbell's now remodeled staff. And as I said earlier, I really think you can tell from what the Bears are doing and the coaching staff hires that they are making. You heard Dennis Allen today. I thought it was a really good conversation that he had with the media at Hallis Hall. We heard from Declan Doyle, the new offensive coordinator at 28 years old for the Bears. All roads seem to lead back to New Orleans. The connections all start there. Ben Johnson getting a lot of inspiration from Sean Payton and his coaching staff. And in fact, we're going to talk in a few minutes to Nick Kosmider. He is the Broncos reporter for The Athletic. And he will explain a little bit more about that Sean Payton coaching tree. Obviously, what Doyle did with Bo Nix to me comes to mind when you're trying to figure out how this comes together in a really positive way for Caleb Williams. So that's one nugget. And if you haven't heard the other one, Adam Schefter mentioning Ian Cunningham as a candidate for the Jaguars GM job. Now the question becomes, how good is Ian Cunningham at saying Duval? Do you even have to say it with that much of a Southern accent? You know, sometimes my drawl comes out, guys. I'm sorry. That's just going to happen. Here's the quote from the Adam Schefter podcast. Here is a name we need to have on our radar. I'm not saying he gets the job, but I will say that he is going to be in contention for the job. Me saying, Layla, that he should be. He's been in contention for a lot of jobs. Ian Cunningham is highly regarded. He has a good reputation. That's why he keeps interviewing for all these jobs. Back to Adam Schefter. The Bears' assistant general manager, Ian Cunningham, he's going to be a candidate for that Jaguars GM job. Some would say he might be the leading candidate for the Jaguars GM job. I don't know if he's the leading guy or a guy, but he's certainly going to be in the mix and a candidate to become the next general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Watch that name, Ian Cunningham. His time is coming. I believe Adam Schefter. I want to get back to something that happened on Sunday. We just talked to James Palmer of many places. He is of the 89 podcast, Underdog Fantasy, and Bleacher Report. If you missed it, you can go back on the Odyssey app, listen on the Rewind feature. And if you wanted to hear more from the Bears press conferences today, you can do that too. We did that at the top of the 6 o'clock hour and all throughout the show. But Aaron Andrews on Sunday broke a sideline reporter rule. If you've ever been a sideline reporter, you get told one major rule. How does it feel is not a question they want you to ask. But thank goodness, Aaron Andrews broke the rule when she talked to Saquon Barkley after an incredible performance at home in Philadelphia to help the team that he had just joined this year get to the Super Bowl.
You told me this season hasn't felt real. How does this feel, Saquon?
I ain't gonna lie. I tried to downplay it in my head, but it's amazing, man. It's amazing. We're here. Super Bowl. But the goal wasn't just getting there. The goal is to win. And we're going to celebrate, enjoy this, and get right back to work.
Hey, let me talk about the game real quick with you guys. Total team effort, defense, offense, what you guys were able to do after those deep turnovers were forced. What are your thoughts on that? It was all in.
We knew that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a team effort. I'm going to give a shout out to Will Shipley. He came in, finished strong. But we talk about in the running back room about making plays. Our guy Kenny went down. Will stepped up big for us. But the team came out, man. Everyone came out, made big plays, and got the job done. And that's how you get to the Super Bowl.
And you are going to a Super Bowl. You told me on Friday. I've dreamt about it. I've thought about the confetti. You're going to see your family here in a minute. How does this compare to what you dreamt about?
I always dreamed about it, but the dream wasn't just getting there. The dream was winning it. So that's what the mindset's at.
Thank you. Thank you for asking an appropriate question. Saquon Barkley has revitalized the thought behind the running back position, the philosophy in the NFL. He famously had the scene on Hard Knocks where he wasn't involved, but you saw how the Giants management team absolutely bungled the decision as to whether or not to keep him, and he made them look silly all season for making that decision. He was the oil to the engine when it came to the Eagles' offense and how they get there. Saquon Barkley goes to the division rival. He's a Penn State Nittany Lion adjacent to Philly. Is representing his team after they score over 50 to get to the Super Bowl in front of his home crowd. I want to know how he feels. I want to know. I'm always curious to know how an athlete feels in one of the greatest moments of their career. I'm tired of reporters not being able to ask the question. I don't want to put words in their mouths. I don't care that that's a question that's going to be asked a million times. I'd rather hear it in their own words, what they want to say about this moment. It was recently done earlier. It was last year when Jalen Brunson just had an outstanding game at Madison Square Garden. The Knicks sideline reporter, courtside reporter, asked him after just a brilliant game how it felt. And his broadcast was being simultaneously broadcast on the speakers at MSG. And the crowd started chanting MVP. Can you imagine what that must be like for somebody? And it moved him to tears. Why wouldn't you want to know how that felt? I'm not going to tell you how to feel. You tell me. Part of the job, the main part of the job, is to celebrate other people's accomplishments. Tyler, if you have the best show of your life, I'm going to ask you how it felt. And I don't care if somebody else in a later show asks how it felt to them. It's silly that we do this.
I think we deserve the MVP chance.
Who doesn't? This is an incredible moment for somebody. I called it the year of the running back to David Haw. We just heard James Palmer talk about the importance of the running back and what you're trying to do offensively. You can't pass with the Chiefs, silly goose. Running the football is going to get you there. With the run, you will succeed. Saquon Barkley showed you that day in and day out. He gets the Eagles back to the Super Bowl. Nick Sirianni is in his second Super Bowl in his fourth season. Only two other coaches in NFL history did that in their first four seasons. This is a man who represents Pennsylvania. My goodness, tell me how it feels. Good job, Aaron Andrews. I'm glad to see you do what you did. Break a few rules every now and then, and we all get better for it. Next up, Nick Kosmider, the Broncos reporter for The Athletic. He joins us to get to know Declan Doyle a little bit better and the obvious growth in the roots that are coming for you from the Sean Payton coaching tree. That's next on The Score.
Certainly very excited for the opportunity to be here. We have a lot of work ahead of us, and I can't wait to dive in with Ben and the rest of the offensive staff. My goal is to be as supportive as possible to Ben, our players, and be a resource in any way that I can be. You know, it's an honor to be here, and looking forward to getting to work.
We're back with more Layla Rahimi on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
And that was Declan Doyle earlier today at Halas Hall as we get to know the Bears' new offensive coordinator. With more intel on him, we go to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Nick Kosmider of The Athletic covering the Denver Broncos. And I appreciate that he put this in his bio, the 2023 Colorado Sports Writer of the Year. Congratulations, Nick. Thank you for joining us here on The Score.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I think you had a really good observation on the I see it's on the top of your Twitter. I immediately, in my research, the roads just lead you back there. When we get to know who Declan Doyle is and how Ben Johnson is building this staff here in Chicago, it seems like all roads lead back to New Orleans and Sean Payton. What is your impression of how Payton's influence has really dominated this coaching hiring cycle?
Yeah, it's a reminder of kind of the way that it went for him when he was first starting to climb in New Orleans, where, you know, he tells a story that Tom Benson, the late owner of the New Orleans Saints, early in that tenure, as they're starting to kind of exceed expectations and catch people's attention, you know, Benson goes up to Sean Payton and says, "Man, like we're getting all these coaches or all these teams that want to try to hire our guys." Sorry about that. All these that want to hire our guys, like, you know, I'm concerned about this. And Sean Payton says, "Mr. Benson, if the bigger problem would be that if people don't want to hire our guys or aren't talking to our guys, because that would mean we're not winning, we're not doing what we're supposed to do." So part of that is just being a coach that's as successful as long as he has, and then and showing some of that quick turnaround for the Broncos. You know, but Doyle is a guy who has been well regarded on his staff since he joined it as, you know, basically a fresh out of college assistant coach who got his start on Sean Payton's staff in the NFL in 2019, and has been with him now for two stops. But three different coordinators or three different new coordinators in the NFL this cycle were Sean Payton assistants last year.
It is really powerful when you see how it gets put together, especially when here in Chicago you consider the Lions being so exemplary in how they've built their team. And, you know, Dan Campbell was a part of the Saints staff. You know, Dennis Allen obviously had the history with the Saints. You understand how that relates with Sean Payton. But I'm old enough to remember when Sean McVay got hired, we thought that was young. To be 28 and to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL. Yes, OC is a different title when Ben Johnson is your head coach. But how do you see Declan Doyle growing and fitting into this role?
Yeah, you know, he even said it himself. I watched his press conference there today, like a little bit surreal. And that was part of what some of us kind of thought right here in the Denver market was, you know, Davis Webb, the quarterbacks coach for the Broncos, is that guy that everybody thought would be, you know, the next guy out from this staff to become an offensive coordinator. But I think that the reality is that Declan Doyle has been in a kind of coaching ecosystem that is similar to how Ben Johnson appears to be building it there and what how he learned it under Dan Campbell, and that he's going to be the play calling head coach, and it'll be Declan Doyle's job to jumpstart the game plan, to you know, kind of be his sounding board as he's dealing with other stuff about what they're going to do schematically offensively. He's been in that system where Joe Lombardi in Denver and Pete Carmichael there in New Orleans were that guy for Sean Payton, who, of course, as the head coach for the Broncos, calls the plays, same as he did in New Orleans. And so I just think there's a little bit of symmetry there that Ben Johnson said, "Hey, okay, this is similar to how we're going to do it." And so to be able to be a guy at 22 to come in and you know, earn his stripes under a coach like Sean Payton and continue to be brought along and promoted under him, I think that says a lot about how Declan Doyle is viewed, you know, in the league right now.
I think that's a big part of this is there are certain coaches who, I guess, if you can survive with or if you can rise up with, that really says a lot about your resume to the rest of the league and who you are. And that's a big vote of confidence. How would you describe what that compliment or that trust is like when you get it from Sean Payton?
Yeah, and I think absolutely it's huge. And then another thing is when coaches on, and we saw this a lot with the success that Sean McVay had of his assistants starting to quickly get poached as he rose there with the Rams the way that he did, is that you're looking for that next guy. And so when somebody like Dan Campbell, who obviously did a lot of his learning as a coach under Sean Payton, becomes as successful as he's become in Detroit, you kind of go back to the origin and say, all right, well, you know, how do we find something similar to this? So I think his connections in the league continue to be an important part for guys. But, you know, you credit Doyle. He talked about his story of just, you know, he kind of had, you know, one mutual coach that he knew on that staff, and that he paid his way down to New Orleans to go spend time with the staff and to be able to put your best foot forward in a way that, again, a guy like Sean Payton, who has no shortage of options when it comes to bringing young coaches along, again, thought enough of Doyle to not only have him be a part of their staff then, but, you know, as soon as he needed a tight ends coach in Denver, that was kind of the first place that he turned.
We're talking to Nick Cosmider. He is the Broncos reporter for The Athletic. He joins us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com on the Score. And Nick, I also want to ask about Bo Nix, because I think he does factor into this, the success we saw him start to really have toward the end of the season. You know, the highlight reel balls that he would throw, just beautiful deep ball. Of course, that's something we want to see Caleb Williams do. We know he can. But how would you say the development of Nix has gone in this season?
Yeah, I think it was really impressive, and especially when you consider kind of how it started. He did not throw his first touchdown pass of the season until week 4. Ends the season throwing 29 of them, which is the second most by a rookie quarterback in NFL history. And so what you saw was the week-over-week progression, the month-by-month, you really just saw him continue to improve and progress, and you saw the offense come with him. And I think that was probably the most impressive part of the season, was just how much he was able to grasp and then grow with each week. But going back to last offseason, one of the things that Sean Payton was adamant about was that they had to take fewer sacks. They were among the most sacked teams in the league in 2023 with Russell Wilson there at quarterback. And he says every study that you do analytically will tell you that if you take sacks on a drive, the chance of success on that drive go way down. And so that was a huge point of emphasis. It's a big part of what drew them to Bo Nix, who does a really good job avoiding those things because of his legs, his quick release, his ability to process. And so I think that is an important thing when you're looking at Declan Doyle and what they're going to try to do with Caleb Williams. A lot of it is quarterback. You have to know what you're looking at. And then building the offensive line along with that to reduce that number, because it's so critical to your success offensively to not set yourself back. And so I think Doyle will have some ideas that he'll bring in that he learned from Sean Payton about how we go about putting him in the best situations to avoid some of these takedowns.
So what you're saying is allowing 67 sacks or having a quarterback who was sacked 67 times like it was here in Chicago is not a good thing. I might understand that correctly.
It's ideally not a great way to find consistency offensively. And you know, the thing about Williams, it's from afar certainly seems like, you know, made of the right stuff in terms of not wilting under that, because that's a lot of punishment to take. I don't care who you are. And so I know that with Ben Johnson, that's going to be a huge emphasis. And I'll be interested to hear as it goes along what Doyle is able to bring from his experiences to how they try to cut that down.
Well, I think it's also one of the benchmarks of the Sean Payton offense is that what you talk about with the sack avoidance. I think DJ Moore is really going to flourish in that kind of concept when you consider how much of it is based on short, quick passes. He's the guy, when I think of that, the yards after the catch that he's able to produce. Like, this seems like it plays into the hands of problem solving for the Bears in a really positive way.
Well, absolutely. And I think you look at, and I was kind of doing some study on this today, it blew my mind, but the Kansas City Chiefs, they threw deep, like, less frequently and probably less efficiently than almost any team in the league this year. And yet they went basically 15-1 in the regular season in games in which they were trying, and have stormed now to the Super Bowl. You don't have to throw the ball deep. What you have to do is you have to put yourself in positions where you don't have to rely on big plays because you're not behind the sticks. Patrick Mahomes, he doesn't get sacked. He doesn't make those mistakes. They're not in, you know, second and third and forever. Like if they get Caleb Williams in good situations with the playmakers that they have, they're going to be in good shape. No quarterback can thrive when you're second and third and long. I don't care if you're Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. It's just not a way to live. And Johnson, I think, is going to be a huge benefit to trying to get out of those situations.
Well, and Nick, in my opinion as well, your body just doesn't hold up. You know, we always talked about the height of quarterbacks, and it doesn't necessarily, seeing over the line isn't my issue. You know, that's always brought up. It's how your body is handling this game 16, game 17, game 15. You know, if you're lucky enough to get to the playoffs, how are you handling? So that's good to see as well. We don't have a ton of time left, and I really appreciate you joining us. What else about Declan Doyle do you think we should know getting ready to have this offseason coming up with the new coach and his staff?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A lot of us even here, we're realizing after he got hired, like, man, we really didn't get a chance to know Declan Doyle that well. You know, it's not often that you're necessarily interviewing the tight ends coach, and, you know, the Broncos didn't have a marquee player at that position that you're necessarily trying to profile or anything like that. So a little bit of an unknown. I think he mentioned the word anonymity for his career going forward. But I did talk to a couple of staff members who said this guy in the building is just one of the most relatable guys that you can be around. Like you wouldn't know that he has any kind of position in the NFL if you were just to chat with him. He's you know, and the tight ends in his room that I did talk to said, like, completely collaborative. Like, he's going to want to pull your ideas. He's going to want to have his players be a sounding board and vice versa as they try to collaboratively build what works for everybody in there. I think that was kind of my big takeaway when polling some people about his impact.
Well, Nick, it's been really interesting to see how many Broncos assistants are getting jobs, like you mentioned, three so far in this coaching cycle. Nick Kosmider, the Broncos reporter for The Athletic, we appreciate getting to know a little bit more about this new Bears coaching staff. Thanks to you, and thanks for joining us on The Score.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
Nick, thanks so much. Coming up next, we've talked a lot about Bears assistant coaches, but there's a position that is unfilled that we need to discuss a little bit more in depth. And also, this is the fall in love with everybody season. So let's go over some of the hot names that have been discussed at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. That's coming up. More football here on The Score. Layla Rahimi, thanks for joining me on my very first solo show.